As much as I like to fight everyone, I'm having a pretty good time here. Why you mad? Why you mad? Why you mad?
All right, hey, Louisa.
Hi, Jake. How's it going?
Good. April Fools, it's not good.
Good one, good joke.
Thanks.
This morning, I tweeted something. It's obviously not even a joke, you guys. Oh, so we have a guest. We'll introduce him in 1 second. But I tweeted some shit where I was just like, oh, you know, this is like the worst, historically a terrible day for comedy. Stay safe out there or something like that.
Yeah.
And then a total stranger who does not follow me responded like, oh my God, I'm afraid to ask what happened. So, like, of course, I don't reply. But then another total stranger replies to that guy and it's like, hint, you know, look at the date. So then the other guy replies and he's like, yeah, but how is this a good April Fool's joke? And I'm like, it wasn't a joke, you fucking idiot. Like, what's going on here? Even the people who are trying to get the jokes are bad on this day. It's horrible. And then by the end, he ended up, so then the other guy explained it to him and was like, no, I think what she's saying is that today is the day where everybody who's not a comedian tries to make jokes and 99% of them are bad. So be careful with the bad jokes. And I like that. And then the guy responds, oh, well, that's very meta because it was neither funny nor clever. So I had to end on an insult on me. And I'm just like, why do I stay on this fucking website that I love so much?
Can I jump in, Louisa?
Yes,
I love that for a second there was like a vulnerable human being like learning about the world, and then it just immediately reverted to like, well, fuck you, let's argue about something.
Yeah, exactly. No, and that it was you didn't get the joke, and then immediately the response is to attack others and be like, it must be that the joke is bad or, you know, whatever. It wasn't even a joke, you fucking weirdo. But anyway, welcome to the show, James Adomian, friend of the show before you even got here. Hi. Thank you for doing it. How's everything
going? Hi. Yes. I've listened to a couple of episodes during quarantine. I thank you guys for doing it.
Oh, thank you for listening.
Good to see you. I miss everything.
I know, right? I actually feel like in a weird way I've stayed a little bit more in touch with my LA friends because we were more used to having distance always, you know? So like, it was more normal to email or DM or text. And then with
set up brunch plans and then not show up.
Yeah, with New York people, I lost touch with a lot of them, I feel like.
Well, in New York, you're supposed to bump into people.
Exactly. We've lost the bumping in. We've lost the bumping in. And we've lost the, do you remember just being like, well, I have a thing to do at 9, so that means I have 3 hours to kill, so I should stop at these two other shows. You know, so then you're just like, I'll just bump around town and see who I run into and who wants to come with me to the next spot, and it'll be great. And that's gone, man. So I am mostly
gone.
You guys
gone, consumed by the sea like Atlantis.
Yeah, exactly. All the bumps are gone. COVID got rid of debumped New York. It sucks. Yeah. We're living in a frictionless New York.
Yeah, not dude, something we're you all live in our little bubbles. And I mean, that also has me wondering, like, when do you think you guys from LA and stuff will start coming back out here for stand-up? Let's put it on some timeline that everybody, because I guess everybody in it's like April, everything's reopening.
I have traveled a little bit, not for showbiz. I've traveled for like emergencies and get out of the country during the election.
Yeah.
I'm not excited to be in front of big crowds until I can be vaccinated. I checked and I'm just narrowly not obese, so I could not get
That's happened to a couple of friends of mine.
You did not make it over the thin fat line like some of us.
it's like what do you call event horizon? No.
So it'll probably be a while. Yeah, no, I'm also I feel the same. I miss stand up a lot, but I am not in a hurry to go to one of these limited audience shows. I'll go to outdoor shows.
I should start doing that. I've been to like little outdoor gatherings and stuff. But sometimes I think I'm safe and I'm like, wow, it's getting better. Last night I was walking around in LA and this should be safe, right? Like, you're walking down the sidewalk and there's no one on the sidewalk. It was like a cartoon. This guy pulls out of a shopping mall driveway with his window down in his car. And so basically it's like he just pulls up right in front of me and starts violently coughing.
Oh my God.
And I've developed this very rude, like absolutely not, like either 180 degree turn or a 90 degree turn. Yeah. Like if somebody starts coughing, I'm just like zip. I'm like, so I was like walking and then like, nope, walk the other way. He just, it was like a screwy squirrel cartoon. This guy just pulled up with the window down and was like,
that sounds like that's how New York was like in March and April of last year. It was like Frogger, like when you would go out to go to the grocery stores and shit, you'd be walking down the sidewalk and then there'd be like a person coming, so you're like, I'll just walk in the middle of the street, and then like a person's walking their dog and you gotta move and dodge everyone, and
yeah. That got bad. Yeah,
if it was crazy. Like a crazy New York street person too, just from yeah. you know, from the essence of New York, you'd be like, oh, they're gonna like run at me, like there's this extra yeah. level where you're like, God damn it.
Dude, you know what happened to me? I had, and this was only like a month ago. Oh, I had to go to the dentist. And then after I went to the dentist, I had to wait for someone. So I stood outside and smoked a cigarette. You know, great oral health. And I'm standing there. And so I like take off my mask. I picked a corner that's like abandoned. You know, there's nobody that's going to cross me. So I take off my mask. I light my cigarette. It's by the G and the F train in like Gowanus, you know. So all of a sudden the door behind me opens, which I thought was locked. And it's like, you know, houseless, kind of probably mentally ill older lady walks out, and Jake and James, she like straight up walks right up to me with no mask and is like, hey, do you have a lighter? Fucking 1 foot from my face. And then I was like, oh, if I give you my lighter, then I don't wear pants. And I'm like, what should I do? I don't understand. And then she's like, I started trying to light it for her, but from like a distance, and the wind kept making it not possible.
Oh, yeah. You can't do anything like that anymore.
So then she says to me, here, let me light it with your cigarette. And I was like, no, absolutely not.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I had to be like, you know what? Here, just keep my cigarette. And I just walked away.
That's what you have, that's what you
like,
can do.
Yeah, I'm like, you obviously don't care about my germs, but I cannot risk this. I was like, gone. I gotta go.
We are so far away from like the 1940s thing of like, care if I smoke? Of course not. Mind if I have one? Let me light it for you. Sure, I'll touch you while you do it.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, my God. Or no, you don't remember the men would light two cigarettes at once and give one to the woman. It was like a common thing.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder.
That shit is fucking done. But, you know, here's a tip that I developed at the UPS store, right? From excessive shopping online, I would have to go and return stuff. And so the UPS store has this constant line. And, you know, they have the little fucking things so people are 6 feet apart, but nobody listens. 6 feet away from you. You know what you got to do? Stand in line backwards, looking at the person behind you.
That's a good move.
Because then, yeah, if you turn around, then you're looking at them, then they're like, oh, why are you looking at me? And they fucking stand 6 feet away from you.
I never would have thought of that. That's an amazing idea.
Yeah, I literally, like, look at my phone, but, like, facing their direction. So then I'm like, I am seeing you the whole time. Yeah. Got eyes on you. Anyway, that is how I would recommend that we fucking navigate this shit. But
good idea. Flip right? the script.
You know,
yeah, man.
I didn't mention this before the show. We can cut it out if I need, but because I know we're trying to talk about certain stuff here. But as long as we're talking about like getting back in, when do we go back to comedy? Did you either of y'all read this article that somebody wrote about like the grind thing?
Olivia.
Yeah.
The what thing?
Her name is Olivia. Oh, I'm going to probably butcher her last name. Cathart? How do you say that?
Cathcart or something like that?
Yeah.
Such a
sorry, I'm not good with the Anglo last names, believe it or not. So, Cathart. But I retweeted it so people can look at the article. But it's about how the hustle is ruining comedy.
You reminded me of it when you were talking about your replies getting into a meta argument with themselves about whether something was a joke. Because I retweeted it because I thought... I agreed mostly with what she was saying, which is that, you know, this thing that, like, we'd had a moment to sit. We had a year to sit, at least, and, like, think about what this thing we're doing is. And it would be kind of sad if people didn't really get anything from that. And it seems like a lot of people, especially people that kept doing stand-up through the whole thing, didn't really get this thing where you kind of, like, when you stop for a little bit and you look at it, you go, wait a minute, why am I doing 10 sets a week? Is it because this is actually in service of this like Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours thing where it's making me better? Or is it just because I'm trying to appear like I'm working a lot more, which is like part of how you get ahead. Or is it another thing? I mean, in my mind, I call comics addicts all the time, where I'm just like, you're deriving meaning from a thing that like kind of isn't really happening or whatever. But I tweeted it out and I was like, you should read this. And then a comic I know was like, well, every time somebody writes about how, you know, how comedy should explains comedy to you, like explains comedy to you, like they understand it more than you do, they should have to include their act. And he like tweeted some of her material and shit. And I was like, yeah. Whoa, back up.
Said, whoa. I don't understand. Somebody said, if you're going to explain comedy, you should then have to show your act in a link or something.
Yeah, that was basically his argument. And I was
he meant critique, right? He meant like
that's criticism. The thing. That's the thing is I stopped him and I was like, I don't think this person is explaining comedy to you. I think that you took that really personally. Like anytime anyone makes an argument about something or like either wrote a piece that like makes a fucking, you know, it's not like even a polemic, like a takedown of a specific person.
No, and it doesn't take down any comics. It's not, it's just about the culture of doing comedy.
Yeah, I mean, I agree or disagree, but it's like you gave away the game immediately by phrasing it like that. How dare this person to explain to me?
You're again saying that someone on the website Twitter took a conversation and immediately assumed bad faith and had personal feelings hurt.
Yeah.
You fucking believe it, James?
Yeah. sounds like a website that people should start doing no more than lurk on.
Interesting. I love it
so much, though. Trey was making fun of me because he's like, Trey Gallion, he's a comic friend of mine, and he's like, we play around about how I have more Twitter followers than him, and I tell him he's bad at Twitter, so he now likes to tell me that people only like my Twitter because I tweet my every thought every single moment of the day. And I'm like, it's working, leave me alone, people like it. What's wrong with it? I can't stop doing it. Speaking of addicts, Jake, but I thought was interesting about Olivia's article, James, sorry we didn't send it to you because we didn't expect to talk about it, but it's a short
thing. That's okay. I would not have read it.
I don't think, and then you wouldn't want to, but
Luisa, your mic's a little low. Can you turn it up?
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
I would not have read it. And then Twitter would be like, are you sure you don't want to read this article?
Exactly.
Somebody made a funny joke the other day about how now when an article gets tweeted, it's, are you sure you don't want to read it? And then you click to read it and it's like, paywall, $5. How dare you not pay us?
And so then it's like, well, I guess I'm going to do neither. But what I liked about the article actually is before the pandemic, what she was saying about how comedy culture was before the pandemic. Because obviously I think that's what caused the fact that there's like this polarization where a bunch of comics did take a year to rest and think and reconsider their lives and their acts and all this shit. And a bunch were like, I can't stop, you know?
It was the longest I've ever taken in my entire life since maybe elementary school without performing.
Yeah.
And, exactly. Absolutely in my adult life, like a major shock of like super busy to zero busy.
Dude, and to be clear, I don't think that was easy for you or for anyone else. Like,
right. It was not easy, but then I had a conversation with myself where I was like, you know, insane talking to myself verbally. And I was like, well, none of this matters. Like, this is a gap year. Like, it's going to last. I knew it was going to last at least a year. And it was like that. No one in 2023 is going to be like, let me go back and appreciate some of that great stuff that came out of that terrible year. Everyone's going to want to.
That's a good point.
Everyone's going to want to immediately forget it.
Yeah. They're going to be like, oh, is this another outdoor special?
When you talk to yourself, do you do it in different voices? That's what I would do.
Oh, yes. I have interlocutors at my disposal, like Elon Musk. James, why are you still performing now when you could be? Why not? Why would you try to come up with 10-minute sets that you're just going to burn at some bar show and not like, you know, make it an NFT that you can burn?
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, so in fucking Olivia's article, the first or what she was saying about before the pandemic was that what she was pinpointing to of like hustle culture ruining comedy, I think is very real and important, which is that before the pandemic, this whole thing happened where bookers, it's not just comics, like bookers, comics, the TV people, everyone, they became obsessed with this numbers game, whether it was like, you know, and before that it was credits, you know, credits was always a thing, but it wasn't the only thing. You know what I mean? Before that there was like, have you seen this unknown guy who's amazing? Come see him. You know what I mean? And there was like the word of mouth amongst gatekeepers of you, this person would work in your room, all that kind of stuff. And then it became this like, to do check spots, you have to have this many credits. To get headliner weekends at my club, you have to have done headliner weekends at five other clubs. To do, you know, like all this fucking numbers thing. And then on the comic side, it became, I'm doing 10 mics a week and getting 5 paid spots every weekend at least. And I'm doing this much. And I write a new hour every year.
I never did any of that. And I kind of was like, my attitude was like, sorry, I'm a grown up. I'm not going to like prove myself in school somewhere.
Yeah.
And yeah. I was like, I've already been on, I was on Last Comic Standing. I'm like, I'm not going to be in any more comedy competitions. Yeah. I'm not going to jump through. James, I rarely do paid spots. It's a surprise when I get paid to do it.
But I think it's like really, if you know comedy and you watch comedy, you can tell which comics were the ones doing this and which weren't. And I think that the hustle comics might think, oh, yeah, because you could tell we're better. And it's not actually. I think that the people who didn't buy into the hustle culture thing were more creatively fruitful in the last 10 years. They found their voices better. They created more like high hitting things than just like mediocre, like putting out a bunch of mediocre shit. You know what I mean?
Well, another thing occurred to me too, which is like, I do, before the coronavirus and even now in the last year, I do so much. I'm trying to find a way to say this that's stepping out of myself, but like, I do so much that it's impossible to promote it effectively. Like, if I accurately promoted all the things I'm doing, people would think I'm lying, right? Or it would just like, yeah, it's so, it would be like, well, that's can't be possible. So like, I gave up. I've steadily given up on promoting over the years, where it's like, well, I'm not going to promote that, and I'm not going to promote that in a certain way, and well, whoever shows up to that or finds it, they'll enjoy that or whatever. And then I'm like, well, certainly. To me, it was like, I'll do stuff sometimes, but like, how am I going to promote stuff when people are like, the body bags are piling up in northern Italy?
Yeah.
And
it's like, well, everyone was, especially the first 3 to 6 months, everybody was like glued to the news. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to be like, hey guys, check this out. Like, no, absolutely not. I don't, in some ways, I'm kind of conditioned to not care if people like find it or not, you know, play to whatever audience shows up at the room.
I think I figured something out about this grind culture stuff today, because she mentions like Malcolm Gladwell in the article, and it hit me, right? Malcolm Gladwell is someone who pretends like he's, you know, good at craft. He wrote this book, 10,000 Hours, that's like, oh, he's explaining to you craft. He's not good at craft. What does he have to present for himself as a result of that? He wrote a book about a thing that's very popular. The thing is, Malcolm Gladwell was on the Epstein flight logs. You know what that means? He's not good at craft. He's good at networking, right? That's the top of the networking game, is if you're in the inner circle of the evilest people on earth, right? And that's what these people are talking about when they talk about grinding. They're convincing themselves, because they're reaping the rewards of it, that this means that it's because I'm doing a good job at stand-up. It's because you're doing a good job at the hangout, but the hangout can't happen during COVID, you know? So
To be fair, Jeffrey Epstein did put in $10,000 in global sex trafficking intelligence operation.
That's true. Yeah, he hit the breaking, hours, the tipping point.
Yeah, totally.
Tipping point.
Right. Well, anyway, I guess so I have a direction. I think this kind of segues pretty nicely, which is that, you know, if you understand like promotion and stuff like that on that level, You do understand that everything happens on the internet and in the discourse and stuff right now anyway, right? And so in order to be really good at that, you don't need to be hanging out at a bunch of clubs, especially during a pandemic. What you should be doing is hanging out online, which is toxic and horrible and would get you killed and all this stuff. But there are people that are really good at it. One of those is Lil Nas X, which we forget about oftentimes when we talk about him. He used to be like a content aggregator type guy before Old Town Road blew up, right? And then it happened and he did some cool things with it. And he's kind of interesting because he's always walking this line between, like, you know, like, even if you know that about him, still pretty cool. You did a thing. You triggered the conservatives and stuff. Like, you used this power for good or for, but then you hear, like, you know, well, he sampled someone's music without telling them and stuff. You go, maybe he's bad again. He's good again currently, I think, because he made this music video that we just watched where he rides a pole dance to hell and then twerks on the devil. Inarguably pretty cool. But what's interesting about it is it, like, this is like a genius marketing move, I guess is what people would call it. Like, he clearly planned this and artificially created a controversy, and he did, you know, what the free speech people do, but in reverse, which is like manufacture a controversy and then sort of like benefit off of it or whatever.
Yeah, you saw the shoes, right?
He's selling shoes. I mean,
and not just selling, but I believe that the Nikes, so it's not like fucking, I don't know, some shoes that you got made at some factory in China. Well, it is in a factory in China, but through a huge organization called Nike, dropped shoes designed to match the video. So they have like the Satan symbol on the front of the laces.
Called a pentagram.
And so the same day that the song dropped, he then started promoting the shoes as well. And so then every time people were like tweeting at him or about him about how like this is how America's going to hell and whatever the fuck, he would be like, oh, he had one tweet. That's the other thing. He's good at Twitter. You know, he's good at being online. And so then he just like quote tweets some conservative who's like super mad at him. And he's like, it's like literally a picture of him looking sad with a sad emoji. And he like pretends like it's going to be him apologizing for the song. And then he just plugs the shoes again. It's so good. It's really great. But ultimately, so the, well, what were you going to say? Continue, because you're like laying it out, right? Go ahead.
I mean, I guess what I'm saying about this is like, it's clearly deliberate, and it's like operating on this like kayfabe, like meta level kind of thing, where like he knew this was going to cause a certain thing. He was going to cause a reaction from evangelicals and conservatives and stuff like that. And then he knew that was going to cause people to then like call them hypocrites. Cause now it's really fun to go on Twitter and come up with takes about Lil Nas X and go like, hey, you know what's really funny about this is these people don't give a shit about Alice Cooper, you know, and like white people satanic stuff. It sounds like they're actually mad because he's gay and he's black, you know.
Yeah. What's that Rolling Stone song? The Sympathy for the Devil?
Yeah.
Like, this is rock and roll.
This is the most tame, like milquetoast, you know, maybe there's an element of something new and like twerking on the devil. But like, I mean...
It's like a childhood fantasy. It's like a game you would play where it's like it's like taking a joke. Okay, you're gonna dance for the devil. Great. It's like people make jokes about the devil all the time. Mm-hmm. Like the devil went down to Georgia. Like why didn't Charlie Daniels' band get canceled for the devil went down to Georgia?
Yeah.
Because he loses in the end. He also loses in the end in this song too.
Yeah. Well, but
he kills the devil.
Totally. But so what's interesting is that this is not the first time that he has bamboozled the conservatives, right? The first time was actually when he made it big, because when he made it big was with what's that, Old Country Road or
Old Town Road?
Yeah. So when he made it big with that, the aesthetics are like cowboyish. The music, the like melody is country music-ish. You know what I mean? So
and then the Billboard didn't want to call it a country song.
Yeah, but at first it was because it was rising so high above all the country stuff that they were like, absolutely not. We can't have this dude be at the top of the country thing. So they were like trying to parse it out to say that it was actually rap. But it got him a bunch of conservative fans like who were like, oh, I can get down with this. You know, this is great. And then as soon as he like got some fucking marker, he got really high, he came out and was like, oh, yeah, I'm gay as hell. Did I not tell you? And then like all these conservatives were like, what? Oh, my God. So this is this
not just conservatives, but it's like homophobes across the spectrum.
Exactly. Yes.
And I thought he handled that very deftly. I just thought, wow, this is an attractive guy, artist, you know, recording artist. And I didn't know he's gay. And then the way he handled that was so effortless and like, oh, just like, bam, there it is.
Yeah.
Like in a movie where the character's just like holding a bunch of aces and then it's like, oh, by the way, I went.
Yeah. Is he Gen Z? It was a very Gen Z kind of
Gen Z reveal.
Yeah.
It was like he handled that so deftly. And then everybody was like, well, nobody can really do anything. You're the winner.
Yeah, exactly. So Jake alluded to the times when he's been called out for stuff. And it's been a few times, but it's funny because he comes out winning. And it's weird to me because so many times when comics get called out for stuff, they don't come out winning. But I think it's specifically because of how they handle it with the whole fucking, like, I'll never apologize for a joke. How dare you try to cancel me or whatever. Because Lil Nas X did. First, it was like when he first came out, then there were people, you know, trying to be like, oh, he's an aggregator. He stole content. He built his whole Twitter following through stealing content from other people and then turned that around to promote his rap. And that's how he got big. And then people looked at the rap and looked at the songs and were like, oh, but they're pretty good, right?
Yeah.
So I guess he's like an artist, so we're going to let that go. So he's in. And then the next thing was, so that's the first thing, right? So if you actually make good art, people will forgive some of the dumb shit that you do. Then the second thing is
what if your art is just screaming about free speech and that's all you do? And like, and you don't really do any characters unless they're also screaming about free speech. That's like,
well, this podcast has made the argument that that's not art, but you know, we have people who disagree with us.
Fucking freedom of speech!
Especially, James, because they have so many dorks giving them money. So it goes back to this network shit that Jake was talking about, where we have turned the world into equating, like, you have the most followers and you have the most money, therefore you must be the best artist. And that is not how it fucking works, right?
Yeah, because every fucking MMA instructor, every fucking MMA dropout whose cousin raped somebody, they're my fucking fans and they subscribe to my Patreon.
Yeah. Like prison guards and shit. We love it. But
it also just raises the question, like, what's the most popular video on YouTube? It's a video of someone like squeezing pus out of a pimple on another guy's head. Is that the best video on YouTube? Is that art, you know? Is that what that means? I mean, it has the most views, probably made the most money, you know? Maybe this isn't an actually one-to-one kind of framework, you know?
Yeah.
YouTube is, I just want to, this is a side note, I just popped into my head. I remember still to this day from like 10 or 12 years ago, the funniest YouTube comment I've ever seen. I don't know why somebody put on like a YouTube video of the Challenger disaster and we looked at the comments and the top comment was, just somebody just said, dumbass. I was like, you little shit. But that was really funny.
Yeah. It is like a stand-up video where someone's like, I could have done better. And it's like, what do you mean? Are you a comedian? Are you famous?
Right. It was funny. It was also funny because of how stupid the person. It's funny because it's a funny thing to say, but also how stupid the person was to say that.
What a hilarious thing to imply you could have done better. The Challenger.
Yes, yes. Oh, you're, man, immune to problems.
Well, so listen, so this Lil Nas X dude, he did get called out for sampling stuff and for stealing ideas after the whole, he's like a Twitter guy, right? Which was,
I didn't know about
year.
It.
Yeah, so last year Fiona Apple called him out because of him sampling her music without permission, obviously. And they had like a back and forth and they had a conversation in private, I guess, and they resolved it and he apologized and he asked her to collaborate on his future album and she agreed. So now they're all good. So then I'm like, see how you could just fucking admit you made a mistake and own it and then say you're sorry and shit will be fine. Number two. And then the third one was over this last video, over call me by your name, Montero, whatever. There were people who immediately responded to the video with the fact that a lot of the concepts in it, like the aesthetic concepts, were copied similar. Let's say they were similar to those in a video by another rapper named FKA Twigs, who you might not know because she is also newish, like Lil Nas X. And so last year they were both
up and they were friendly about that too.
Yeah, exactly. So she But here's the irony. So it was like last year they were both up for best new rap artist, I think, or maybe best new video. I think it was best new video, maybe. And she lost to him. But the video that she was nominated with was the one. So it's like somebody even like tweeted at him like, damn, you beat her at the Grammy and then you just like copied her video for your next video. That's so fucked up.
Yeah.
But they had a conversation, and then I guess he also spoke with the art director of FKA Twigs' video, and they like he acknowledged inspiration. Like the way that Lil Nas X put it was that he works with a team who contributes to the aesthetic and the execution of the idea, and he recognizes that those people were influenced by this other video, and was fine. And so then like the art director guy or the director of Twig's video was like, he tweeted something where he was like, yeah, you know, we understand collective consciousness happens, you know, people think of similar things, we all influence each other as artists. I'm glad that he respects that we provided some influence and inspiration.
It's also worth pointing out that it looks a lot like a really cool video game.
Yeah.
Especially at the beginning, it looks like it looks like you're dropping into some like ancient Greek warrior video game.
Yeah. Or like one of those weird Skittles commercials or something.
But dude, this is funny because it's I see a lot on Twitter where a comic will tweet something and then another comic will either like reply to them or screen grab them or something. And with their tweet, that was like 14 minutes earlier or whatever, you know, and being like, oh, look at you, you're copying me or whatever. And the funny thing to me is, have you not seen the other 47 people who made the same joke? Because it's so easy and we all exist in the same society and are often influenced by the same ideas.
And Twitter is like the same five jokes over and over again. You know, this ain't it, chief, and broke, woke, and all that shit. Yeah, what I think is interesting about Lil Nas X is like...
This.
Oh, God.
This.
Yeah. Even the ones that like are cool though, like, you know, you hate to see it. I mean, that was fun to say for a little while, and now I need to put a stop to it personally. Like, everyone I know is just, you hate to see it. You love to see it. You hate to see it.
It's always when journalists start doing it and getting like 10,000 retweets.
Yeah. There's a life cycle and stuff like
that's
that.
That's a really good market.
I hate the website. I hate the website.
I
can't use it anymore. I'm just lurking there now. I'm just going there and reading the news and like basically just retweeting things and very rarely posting anything if I'm like drunk or something. And, like, I don't even promote my stuff there anymore, which people get mad at me for. Because I'm like, well, it's become a message board, and like it's like a message board, and they have botnet. Everybody has a botnet except the good guys. No good guys have any botnets. All bad guys have them, and so it's like, why am I logging on to this like cyber war platform?
Yeah, it is horrible.
It was particularly bad. It's particularly bad during the Azerbaijani and Turkish attack on Armenia and Artsakh last fall. And nobody who's not Armenian cares or notices. And it's like ultimately ultra depressing, where it's like Americans just want Armenians to shut up, whether they all get killed or not. Like the American position on Armenia is like, well, we wish this would just, we would never have to hear about this again. And so the Turkish and Azerbaijani like cyber warriors knew that and had this massive rollout of like huge troll and botnets, where there's all these accounts that were created in July of 2020 or September, or October, 2020. And Twitter knows about it, doesn't care. Like with the Nazis, they go through like once a year and clear out some Nazis to like be like, we did something. You got to shut up.
But comedians are like, why did I just lose 3,000 followers? I know.
They didn't even bother with the Turkish cyber war operations on Twitter. And it's like, okay, I get it. So you just have a platform that's just, trolling that causes like deaths in a military war is like that's an element of a cyber war, and
that's
you don't even care.
Amazon right now, same thing. There's like
Amazon is getting caught every day.
He's going to come on PDA, my other show, and talk about it this weekend, but he found some...
Jeff Bezos?
Yeah, Jeff Bezos. No, Ken Klippenstein, this journalist who... He found a leaked document about where they're training people to run... So they're not bots, they're like hiring. Amazon hired people to put a little box emoji in their name and say, I'm Carol from Oak Facility, and I really like you not going to the bathroom that much, and actually, you know, I just feel so free or whatever.
Wait, I think it's actual employees, and then they were like, if you are an employee that would like to do this, then we'll pay you extra.
Right, sure, yeah. So
why did Twitter give them a special box thing to be like you're not supposed to get like a special thing emoji on your account? Like, did Twitter do that, or that's
That's an emoji. You just put it in your name. Okay. It's not a brown checkmark.
I just don't know how keyboards and emojis work.
Well, but they also did a thing where, I changed my name to Jake with the box emoji at PIS5 because I was referring to the fact that they got in
trouble and they shut you down.
Pissing in bottles. I don't know. I'm getting really close to getting shut down, so I have to be careful now. So I took it down because someone told me, oh, they're banning people for posing as these Amazon accounts, which I don't, maybe true, maybe not, but it worked enough to get me to stop doing it because, you know, maybe that's just all you need to do, right? But I guess
I love it. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that I love Jeff Bezos's, like, he's such an evil guy, but you see him interviewed places and he's like, he's just like one of these like surfer guys. That's like, you know, we just like, I was just out on like laying on a surfboard and I thought, you know what? I want to dedicate my life to just like good vibes. And it's just like, you got to like, I think of Amazon as just like a wave and you got to like ride that in, whether it's like a wave of like human power instead of like ocean power and moon power. It's just like human beings. You just got to ride that fucking funnel, man.
Oh man.
Yeah, no. Dude. It's like, we bring things that people want, man.
Never let me stop
you, Paul Lebowski,
doing a voice because I enjoy them so much. It's easy to forget. He's like a Seattle douchebag guy who turned.
Yeah, man. It's like, what, you know, it's all about bringing people like what they want. And in business, it comes. Here's what it's about business. It comes down to just like making sure that your orientation is like customer oriented. Definitely not worker oriented, like customer oriented.
Oh man. Okay, so
Sorry. I was just going to tell you, James, that there was actually a similar thing. Maybe the scale is smaller, but in Colombia, in a city called Buenaventura, which is like probably highest population of Afro-Colombians, right? And there is like a citywide lockdown where the government, like, there was a sudden mysterious rise in fucking murders and attacks on Black women and Black people all over the city. So the cops put them under basically like house arrest, like what do you call it, curfew, very early. So
now the victims, like, or just the whole city?
The whole city. And but it's because they're not like doing anything to fix the problems. They're just like over policing until to the point where now there's like violence erupting between citizens and police like every day. And there's nothing about it in American news, or which I'm sure is not as big as a thing as happened in Azerbaijan, but it can be very frustrating.
Yeah, that is very frustrating. It was a very clarifying moment for me in the fall about how unimportant Armenians are in all sides of the American political narrative, because you have clear bad guys, Turkey and Azerbaijan, that planned for years to attack in Artsakh, this ancient homeland of the Armenians. And it was ethnic cleansing. It was planned as an ethnic cleansing exercise. It was carried out as such. It was hard to even talk about because of like the body mutilations and stuff that they carried out, which is a telltale sign of the gray wolves and so forth. The body mutilations and torturing civilians and things. And nobody nobody cared. And I would be even like trying to like reach out to journalists I know and be like, hey, do you know anybody who would take this story? Take the story. Somebody should write a story. I was pitching the story to a lot of journalists. Like somebody should write a story about the cyber war angle of what's happening in Nagorno-Karabakh. Nobody took it. Nobody understand it. Not even like Wired magazine or The Intercept. And now those stories are starting to come out, but they're coming out. The vacuum wouldn't last forever, obviously. But now those stories are coming out in like foreign policy from the bad guy angle of American politics, where there's like the security community journalists that are like, American security experts are really studying what's happened in Nagorno-Karabakh from a very interesting cyber war perspective and drone perspective. Like, they're totally leaving out like, oh no, they killed a bunch. They killed like thousands of civilians, and they
like, what could we learn about doing this in our land?
Yeah, they're smashing ancient Armenian artifacts to pretend that they never like were the indigenous people there.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I get it. You want to? It's like you have a defense news angle from your think tank about like what was a cool development in the technology of the war. I agree. It's interesting about the technology of this war was won by drones. And it's, that's very interesting implications for the future of warfare around the world. But you can't leave out the ethnic cleansing part. There's a 120-year Turkish project of trying to erase the Armenians from Anatolia and the Caucasus. And all Armenians have had like a stark realization of just like going like, nobody cares. Yeah. Nobody cares. It's like in Star Wars, if there's these adorable little Ewoks and nobody comes to save them. It's just the Empire they're lasering.
Yeah, nobody, the story's never who won the war, what are the implications, why? It's just that it happened. This kind of reminds me of something interesting that our friend Daniel Bessner wrote a while back about video games. He was talking about the video games they used to recruit, like, to shill for the military, for, like, high school students and stuff like that, and how, like, in them, they just have these very nihilistic, like, they even have a lot of criticism of the American government, but it's just, like, compounded with criticism of everyone else. And he kind of, there's really interesting conclusion I thought is relevant to a lot of stuff, which is that like these video games, it's like what happens in the game doesn't matter. It's the form is what is important. As long as you're just pounding first person shooters into teenagers' heads, the politics is a background to it, because it just creates this like it hammers into your head a reality of like, this is normal. This should be happening all the fucking time. So like reframe what you're talking about, this Armenian genocide stuff, very cleverly, as just like
there's there's a huge connection between some of the military video games that are like that coordinate with the military-industrial complex about how to create those narratives. And I had a joke. I should never have stopped abandoning this joke, I guess, or I never should have abandoned it from maybe 7 years ago, where I had a joke about like Call of Duty 8, where it's just like a civilian override, where I had all these like fake Call of Duty games where your explicit mission is to like override a democratically elected government in a neighboring country. and then like the secret mission you unlock is to kill a journalist to expose what you did in the last mission.
Yeah. Well, I thought what Bester's point was that most of the games are like that, but this like newest one kind of isn't. Like it does, if you make games that are based on history long enough, you eventually kind of have to point to like certain things that happened in the Cold War and like third world shit with the deep state and stuff like that. And he's like, they were able to make a game that had criticism of like the CIA in it, but it doesn't matter because the point of the game is it's fun to grab a gun and go to another country and shoot stuff. And like, you can put that stuff into the background, cause like the form just does the shilling for the military for you. Cause a teenager playing the game isn't going to even all the only message they're getting is just like the world is fucked up and everyone on all sides is bad, so you might as well just grab a gun and shoot somebody.
Yeah, militaries and intelligence agencies are full of people who believe that those militaries and intelligence agencies are bad. There's lots of people in those organizations that are like, well, it's fucked up what they do, but what else can I do?
What else can you do is really the fucking baseline. It's fucked up.
It extends to the creation of the technology too, because they do cross over with like development of the software that runs the drones. Is a lot of the people who previously had worked in video games in some cases, and they work with the military. Shit.
You worked on Little Nas X's video, and now you're making a drone.
You're making a fucking pole that you can slide down to and bomb somebody.
Obviously, I think it's worth pointing out too that Qbert was funded by the CIA also.
Yeah.
Going back even to the 80s. And he was teaching people from that point that we needed Star Wars, the Reagan SDI initiative, and that it was important for orange American imperialists to go around like hopping on squares and changing their colors.
That's Q. Yeah. Q is Qbert from Q and
Qbert,
I.
Yeah. Qbert. And that's why when they lost the January 6th insurrection, you could hear on some of the videos that he went.
Oh my God.
Yeah, when that guy fell off that wall.
Actually, it's Qbert. When I play, I'm not a gamer, but I like play like dumb video games. And when I Qbert is my cooldown game. When I can't stop or like beat some level or something, I'm like, all right, I'm not ready to go to bed. I'm gonna play Qbert. Because it sucks. It's a terrible game.
And then you just fall asleep. Like,
yeah, and you just kind of were like, well, now I'm done.
I feel it.
It's a cute, terrible game. That's what Qbert is.
I guess, to me, so the point I was kind of getting at, my big galaxy brain take of this episode, I guess, in terms of Lil Nas X, is like, he's a pop star. We talk about this a lot on the show. What a pop star is like a meta artist. Like, it's not just that they make stuff and that you go, wow, they came up with that. That sounds good. It's that you're like, wow, watch, look as they're able to climb the industry and do all these like power moves. And you don't even care that somebody else writes their songs, because it's not about that at all. It's not about like the individual person having talent. It's like, how is this person able to get famous creatively or whatever? And I think what's really interesting about him, especially being like a Zoomer, is like, you're saying like, yeah, he makes these fucking plays where he lays down his card and he's got pocket aces, and you're like, holy shit. He's kind of like, he's like the first like pop star troll of a certain.
That's what my fucking galaxy brain take is going to be, Jake.
Hilarious.
I actually think, instead of being like he's a rapper or he's a pop artist, I would argue that he is the first like super poster slash troll
kind of
crossed over to performance artist.
So do you think that he could raise awareness?
Let's see. I want to know how many sets he's doing hustling around town before.
Not many, but you know what his sets are? His tweets.
That's what I'm saying.
He posts all day. He makes TikToks. He does all of it, dude.
He grinds in that way on Twitter. My question though is, do you think that he could raise like awareness for the Armenian genocide, given that he's like, if you wanted, can you do something like that? Because Twitter does have this quality where like you are able to talk about stuff on it that you can't talk about in the mainstream media. And he keeps doing this thing where he's like, I already got famous. Now I'm going to tell you I'm gay, or now I'm going to do something that I couldn't have done before I already got you all on my side. So like, is that possible?
It's possible, but he'd have to be educated on it. And he'd know what he's, I mean, where's he going to find out about it? I mean, maybe he already knows. There's a lot of other shit going on. And if you're not paying attention, if you're not interested in conflicts around the world already, and if you're the kind of person that's just interested in conflicts around the world, there's a greater than 50% chance that you work for some evil think tank in Northern Virginia.
Right.
So you're like one of the bad guys most of the time.
And or you don't have a platform.
Or you went through some international development program in some college where the professor was a CIA asset or whatever. You're just like, even if you have a good heart, like you're funneled into the situation from the evil angle. So it's like, there was a couple of people who spoke up about what was happening in Armenia, like Elton John and Cardi B, and they got bombarded with famous people have to deal with a lot of trolls, but they took it to a cyber war level of bombarding them day and night for like 2 days until they took down their statements on Instagram.
Shit. Yeah.
And that was a social media cyber war front, and no one talked about it like that. There were celebrities who spoke out, God damn it! I wish Anthony Bourdain had still been alive. He would have. He was a friend.
Yeah,
he but was cool. Celebrity spokespersonship is a tricky thing, because you can defeat it with the stupidest possible cyber war button, which is send 100,000 trolls at them.
Yeah.
And if you have a platform that's not willing to like ban them, then it's going to work. And it's the stupidest. It's a human wave attack. It's a human wave attack with obviously fake accounts that are obviously coming out of some office in Baku. You know, it's obviously fake cyber war accounts. And plus you're up against that. Plus you're up against the think tanks that are kind of going, oh, we need to take a serious look at both sides, which is their favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know. Lil Nas X, happy to talk to you about it, but I don't think he hears me.
Well, it's interesting question from Jake and an interesting point that you make, James, because we ended up at a place.
I think Lil Nas X should take a poll down to Ankara
and blast and, flash yeah, all and of them in their asses.
Twerk for Recep Tayyip Erdogan and end up like killing him at the end. That would be a really cool mission for him. That's the Call of Duty mission I would send him on.
That'd be fucking cool.
No, I love that we ended up at a place where we are actually looking at two different sides of a social media army, right? Ones that are fake, that are that can literally be created by like governments and bad groups and fucking bad people who are idolized and worshipped, and then they mobilize all of those to get what they want politically and socially and financially. But then there's also this Lil Nas X thing of you can build a platform of the little Twitter army trolls that love you genuinely, where it's like a genuine love, and then they come for anybody who attacks you, you know? And so then it's like, it's bad on both sides, I guess, but it could do something. So it would be good if we could reach out to Lil Nas X, tell him about things we think he should tweet about so that we can educate him and get him to use his army to help us with our various...
Sure, yeah, but you...
yeah,
you need a different. You need a different social media than Twitter. Twitter is not working, and in fact, they have that now they have like whatever like little Twitter cop efforts where it's like Twitter safety.
Yeah.
Works with evil think tanks. Like there's some evil think tank out of Stanford. There's these evil think tanks, and some of them pose as human rights organizations. Like Human Rights Watch is very bad. Amnesty International is very bad. Mm-hmm. Amnesty International just does whatever the British Crown wants. And Human Rights Watch is the American version of it. And they're both of them shamefully absent during the war on Artsakh in the fall. And then under obvious pressure from the Turks started like criticizing like, well, little minor violations that the Armenians committed. Like, oh, they've left some landmines in the ground. It's like they attacked and killed and beheaded a bunch of civilians. Yeah. And they committed ethnic cleansing and they're continuing to do so. And it's a 120 year project. Catch up, assholes. Twitter's actively partnering with these evil think tanks to police their own website and stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's a dead website. I think it's doomed and unworkable. And I think there's never been a riper time for a Twitter killer. And there would be disagreement about what it would be. But I think it's very easy to kill off the botnet capability. Make it so that you don't have to use your real name, but you have to have an identifier that's like one person, one account. Yeah. Do not let any think tanks or corporations have accounts. It's just real human beings.
Yeah.
So there's zero corporate free speech. Yeah. So I'm sorry, the fucking Heritage Council or whatever they're fucking called.
Fucking oil companies and shit.
Oh, yeah.
Exxon.
The Coctopus. Yeah.
Yeah. Not only does Exxon not get an account on this new website, but they also don't get 10 accounts for every region of the world that they're operating
in. Yeah.
And the Atlantic Council doesn't get an account. Like, you don't have to, and you also don't have to give a backdoor to police officers unless they take you to court.
Yeah.
And like, do a new social media where you can't have a botnet, and where I have this great idea that I'll just give away because I don't know how to develop websites, which is limit people to like fucking 5 posts a day or something. So you can't be a troll. So you don't have to be positive, but you can't like swarm someone artificially from an office where you're trying to ruin someone's reputation.
Yeah.
What was that? Did you guys see that movie on Netflix that came out last year from Poland that was about like trolls and cyber wars?
No.
God damn. I need to
I might have seen a trailer for it.
Yes. I'm going to look it up right now. Like some guy, like, you know, those terrible YouTube videos where somebody's still streaming and then going like, let me look this up.
Yeah. The Poland most popular things on YouTube. Yeah, I know about that. People love that shit. That and the pimple stuff.
My favorite kind of YouTube, as I looked this up, my favorite kind of YouTube video is like when they're screen sharing their stupid like computer and they're like, here's what Mars would look like. And they're like, you're watching them like click around. It's called it's called The Hater. It came out last year.
It's called The Dom Hater. Trump's movie.
It's on Netflix. It's a brilliant movie about the world of trolls and troll farms and cyber war from inside one of the guys doing it. And it's in Poland where they have like a virulent, violent right-wing uprising that's online, active in the alt-right spheres of social media. And it shows how that world sometimes is used as like corporate espionage to like destroy competition from one corporation or influencer to another, but also in political realms. So people need to be educated about like how much they're seeing on these websites is fake. Created by, you could say created by publicists, but that's like, that's the nicest version of it. Like created by like violent think tanks, to make you think something. And you could easily stop it. You could easily stop it with an internet where you had to, use a pseudonym if you want to, but you only get one account. And also limit the number of posts you can do per day. So you don't have to be positive, but you can't just like swirl down into a nightmare of permanent negativity as the narrative. And if you're going to be negative, make it constructive negativity. And also any website, you might, but you might not, because I have a good eye for it. You know, if everybody I report that where their account should be taken down, I've got a great eye for it. I'm too busy to do it, but like you just get some, it's not that hard. Twitter knows the fake accounts. They could easily go to like, and be like, let's like take 90% of the July 2020 fake accounts from Azerbaijan and delete 90% of them, and their website would be better.
Yeah, you know,
but they're not going to do that because they want the cyber war happening on their platform.
Yeah, I mean, that's the
more
thing,
activity on their site,
driven by like advertising or whatever. Yeah. And
also, frankly, I don't know why some of these websites don't just go, well, I know why, but like this would be a great move, would be like, oh, by the way, our website just simply can't be used from Turkey or Azerbaijan. There's too much state-sponsored cyber war coming from those countries, so you're just not allowed to use the website from those places. Yeah. That would clean up a lot of the internet.
Oof, but then you get into like, because look at what happened in Egypt, where Twitter was a way, and I mean, granted, the problems have gotten worse with Twitter since the Egyptian
It's gotten worse.
But it was a source of people being able to connect and being able to get news outside of their towns.
You can do that with a better website.
With other things, totally. No, and my real...
You could do that with Signal, really.
Right, exactly. But Signal isn't a it's direct messages. It's not public posting that you can share and retweet and get more eyes on and shit like
Wait
that.
Wait for Signal 2.0 to come out.
They should. They totally should. Because actually, I think you're right that if somebody made this and offered all these security things and improvements, the only thing then would remain, I think, is there are a bunch of people who either wouldn't know or wouldn't care or wouldn't be willing to give up the following they already built on Twitter to go start over on something else.
No, you could have said that about MySpace 25 years ago.
Totally. No, I know.
People did.
This happened. MySpace was before 9/11.
Musicians were really, they had a hard time transferring. They're the last people to transfer off from MySpace because a lot of them built their fucking following on it.
And their music career and all this shit.
But I mean, look how bad it is. It's unusable. It's an unusably bad website.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with you. Even though I love it so much, I know it's a sickness. But here's the thing. Here's what we're going to do.
RSS is an open source technology, I think. You could just do another Twitter and have better rules.
Where would it come from, though? Because like the problem with all this stuff is it comes from the private market, and it's just fucking motivated by all this stuff. And so you go, all right, do we create a national social media network? Does that have... implications, would that work or not, you know, or could somebody just make a thing by themselves.
Make it all open source.
And then,
it can be done. And you could even do it in a way that there's bad guys allowed on it, as long as they're not allowed to artificially game the system with botnets.
Yeah. So what we could do is we're going to put a better Twitter on our YU Mad vision board, along with...
Yes! Yeah, that's along, the vision board.
Along with, James, the thing that was previously on there was a communist comedy club, right?
Where it's not previously on there. It's on there right now.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Currently, it was the first thing that went up there. Is
how communist comedy club.
I'm trying to make I'm trying to make a co-op that is not quite a commune, but it doesn't have a one fucking dickhead running a comedy club. It's a bull.
You're gonna call it Ha Ha Holodomor?
I've heard all the jokes.
Will get paid.
McMondrigans. I think I might call it Nobodies. I think that's kind of a funny name for a comedy club.
Yeah, I like
Mark's.
That.
Marks and Chuckles.
I like it. So, I mean, we're not going to give up. I think this is what I do. I poke holes in Jake's theory and his plans of how he's going to make this happen. But I think this is how we're going to brainstorm it into a real thing. And then once we get the comedy club running, we'll make a new Twitter for James Adolian.
A conquest of laughs.
Well, yeah. you should have... Are you going to be like, keep talking to a minimum, like political infighting has to happen like between sets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go into it's the...
No talking in the back of the room for sure. You're going to get the fuck out of here to argue about politics. But that's why, Jake, you're going to need separate rooms. You're going to need like a bar room and a performance room, right?
Of course. I've thought about all this. Everyone wants to poke holes in my little utopian dream. You know what I want
to
do?
You have a guillotine that's decoration only, that's never to be used, but it's just there.
Yeah, I like that too, actually. Just there to keep everyone, you know.
In line.
Yeah.
Oh, instead of a light, you drop the guillotine.
You drop the guillotine. There you go. That's fun. You see it in the back of the room.
That would be really fun.
What I want to know is what would it sound like if Elon Musk was pitching this new social media to his friend Jeff Bezos?
Well, like, first of all, I think, Jeff, like, we can probably agree that the problem with Twitter is that there's too many constraints on our botnets.
Yeah, it's like, it's, you know, you got to look at this problem from, like, every angle. I mean, and I know you and Elon, like, what you guys are doing in Austin is just... What you guys are doing down in Austin, turning it into just this hub, this like spaceport, all right, Mars future, Total Recall. I love it. But we need the cyber armies that can facilitate that.
That's exactly right. That's why I'd like to start training people on Mars as soon as possible. My plan has always been to shoot myself to Mars and just kind of die there with my eyeballs popping like a cartoon steam engine. And Grimes, like, we hit the surface of Mars and then, like, Grimes, you know, her body kind of starts opening up segment by segment, and she goes 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 weeks.
Right, yeah, like the totally recall, man. But, you know, let's get there. Let's do a two-pronged attack, as like Sun Tzu said, right? You know, whenever a guy starts quoting Sun Tzu, things have turned sour.
Yes, I'm always thinking that, you know, when my army gets to a river, if it starts drinking, that it's like, it shows that it's weak. So I refuse to let many of my cyber war army people drink from a river. A lake or pond is like, okay.
Yay.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast, Elon Musk.
Well, that's great. I'm always like monitoring everything. You guys think that we have so many bots, like, we've got like bots inside of bots. Like, even the thing that you think is like, wow, it's just like antivirus on my Mac. Well, that's probably like, bloop, one of my bots.
Is Qbert a bot? Is he Qbot?
That's a great question, man. Qbert, like, I realized that Qbert could be weaponized back in 1982. And so Qbert was attached to Oliver North's death squads down in Central America.
in the late 1980s, a lot of stuff that you read about in the Jack Ryan stories, that's actually Kubert was involved in. You think there would be a square, like we thought about it like this, man, there would be a square. And we were doing it, the R&D side of it, you know, like command and support networks from, you know, cyber warfare, satellite and all that. But you would see, we would look at the space in Nicaragua. We see like, well, this particular square has land reform. And then we would just send a Kubert death squad in to try to flip it over.
No, Kubert, no.
I have to say, this is a place that I have to diverge like a little bit, because Kubert is one of like the main le annoying obstacles that I have to like deal with on Mars, because you like start to get out there and build like, you know, like colonizing Mars, you start to build like a little dome or whatever, and then this asshole, he always comes flopping down from space and like hopping on your shit. No. Also, Kubert, like, what a dumb asshole. His whole thing is that he's in space and yet gravity kills him. That's like true. If you're truly in space, then why do you die when you fall off the side of the thing? You should float.
Yeah.
Probably too much inside, because people don't remember enough about Kubert. But you will bow at the ziggurat of Kubert. My God.
Well, it's QAnon will be revealed. All, you know, the acolytes and the virgins will bow. We learned a lot from Jeffrey. We're stepping on his shoulders. We're standing on the shoulders of evil madmen geniuses, and you will all bow down at the great interplanetary ziggurat of Kubert.
Where we go one, we go all. I'm like telling you, man.
That's the episode title.
All right. I think that's
the whole
it.
Thing. Yeah. Awesome. James, thank you for coming on the show. It was really nice to talk
thank
with you.
Thank you. Thank
again.
You.
Do you want to plug anything?
Yeah, you have 90
I've got plug. Very little going on. I'm working in cartoons. I'm on Duncanville on Fox, and I'm on Close Enough on HBO Max.
You were great on Harley Quinn. I enjoyed it like quite a bit.
Oh, thank you. That's a crazy cartoon. I love doing it. And I'm on a lot of other cartoons I do. My podcast failed a year ago because of coronavirus, and but it was good. So it's up for a $1 paywall if you go to theunderculture.com, and it was brilliant and great and ahead of its time, and it's still there. And I might bring it back for some one-off things in the future.
Yeah, it was great.
And don't follow me on Twitter. follow me on Instagram, and I don't really promote much there either, but it... but for now, until like there's a new social media that saves us all, like, yeah, well, find me there, and I'll be doing other things. You can, you know what, the best way to find me is to just like follow comedy when things start coming back, and I'll just probably show up at some room that you go to without hearing about it from me.
All right, I like it.
I'll tell you about it, guys.
He's in the winds. Like
Jake, what are you going to fucking plug? You got anything to plug?
Yeah, listen to my other podcast, Pod Damn America, to hear that thing I was talking about with Amazon. We're going to talk about it this weekend. We talked about the boat that got stuck in the thing on our bonus episode last week. It's pretty fun. Week before that, I went on a weird deep dive about evangelical organizations that do all sorts of fucked up shit. And I think that's it. Follow me on Twitter. I know we just talked about how it's bad, but I have things to promote.
But I love it.
And we signed up for our Patreon.
The power surging through.
Yeah. Yeah, like Jake said, sign up for our Patreon, but also give us a review on one of the superpowers of podcasting, Apple, whatever the other ones are, you know, so that we, I don't know, supposed to help or something. I don't know. Give us that. And then, check out future episodes. We are getting some more guests. It's going to be really fun. And then also, Jake, as a heads up, on our next solo one, I'm reading this book about consent in the age of Me Too.
Whoa.
We're going to have to talk about it, Jake. It's going to be a fucking discourse episode.
Oh, wait. Hold on.
What happened?
James just got up.
I get it. I didn't write this. But I'm reading this book. It's really good. If you're interested, it's The Ministry for the Future by Kim Stanley Robinson.
Oh, we had Kim Stanley Robinson on Pod Damn America. He talked about that book.
Fuck yeah. It's a great book, and I highly recommend it so much that I even think powerful people should be strapped down or kidnapped and forced to read it.
Yeah.
I'm going to check it out. I'm getting back into reading after a horrible year of not reading. So I am looking for recommendations and working my way there, and already have so much to say.
I had a fine time with the pandemic because I carved myself out a niche in the world of leftist bullshit as a comedian, and because of grind culture had not read all the things I was supposed to read. So I'm reading my ass off until comedy starts again. And so that's why you should listen to my show, because I'm trying to turn it into, you know, listenable podcasted material. I just did State and Revolution. That's going to come out this week too. And I'm struggling to understand it.
Is our latter day George Plimpton, a man of letters.
Yeah. I love it. It's great.
A man of the hate letters, hate mail. I don't know.
A man of hate mail and a man of hate letters.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, listen to my dumb shit where I try to be smart. That's my pitch. All right. That's it. That's the end of the episode. Thanks, everybody. Bye. Got it.